Welcome to Romancing the Screen, bearing it all with intimacy coordinators, actors, and crew. Hi, I'm Rachel Flesher.
Hey, Rachel. I'm Annie Spong.
And I'm Catherine O'Keefe.
How y'all doing today? I know you can't respond to me because we are recording. But seriously, it's been a long day, and I'm happy to be here talking about terms, because terminology is important, and we wanted to respond to some of the questions you've been asking us. So we were deciding that today's episode is going to be all about responding to those questions and trying to group it in a way that makes sense, but to be honest, it doesn't always make sense, so bear with us. Annie, I would love to pull from your expertise as someone who has worked as a costumer and who does work as a costumer. Can you tell us a little bit about, if you're an intimacy coordinator, what costumers are you going to work with on set?
That's a great question, because working with costumes is really important to understand what the cast might be wearing and what the fitting pictures, images look like for these particular scenes. Not only that, but you want to make sure you can connect with costumes to discuss modesty garments and make sure that they have the garments that will be appropriate for the scenes. So you're going to want to talk to, you want to loop in with the costume designer. I usually email and CC the whole department so everybody has the same information, so they understand the scene's coming up. It's going to be intimacy. But then I circle back and I actually loop in with either the key costumer and the trailer person, and also the set costumer, the person that will be on set with the actors.
Nice. So what I just heard was, there's a lot of costumers on set. It sounds like there's a set costumer who's on set, and then there is a trailer costumer, a costume designer. I think we've also chatted about a costume supervisor.
Correct. A key costumer is another one. I don't even know it. I also emailed the key costumer, but gun to my head, I couldn't tell you exactly what they do.
Annie, what's just that? But, so what is each person's job like in a quick mini rundown? What's each person's job on a costume team?
Overall, the costume designer sets the visual look for the whole show. The assistant designer is the right-hand person. The costume supervisor handles all the mechanics, setting up accounting, all the time cards, all the logistics of things getting picked up and dropped off. The trailer person handles everything on that trailer. So all the costumes are, it's like a big giant closet. So it's organized by character and scenes so that all those outfits and garments are there. So when it comes to our intimate scene, that trailer person is going to have the modesty garments in that scene's look. And then you have the people that are on set with you. So they're the ones that accompany the cast to set to make sure that every one of their needs is met. And that if there's a wardrobe malfunction or something needs to be stitched, they're there to do it.
That's awesome. That helps me understand even more, because I, like Catherine mentioned, I CC everybody because we all need to be in the loop. But knowing who you're going to interface with is really helpful. And I know that that can kind of shift from set to set with other departments. I know in general, it sounds like when you're an intimacy coordinator, you interact a lot with the set costumer because you are both there on the day.
Correct.
What is on the day, by the way? We say that a lot. Someone want to answer that?
Well, there was two things that came up. There was set.
Oh, yeah.
What's a set? And the set is the actual space that we are shooting the scenes in. It could be a location set in a house at an address that you've been given on your call sheet, or it could be on a stage. It could be stage 15 on the Sony lot, and you're in this particular scene. So that's set. And then I forgot the other question.
On the day.
On the day. The day is on the day. So I might talk to costume and say, on the day, we're going to need these items, meaning on the day we're shooting this scene, this is what we're going to need. And just to recap, there could be many more people in the costume department, key costumer, multiple set costumers, depending on the cast. So it's not limited to 5 or 6 people. It could be 10.
That's great. And Catherine, you used to work in the production office. Thank you so much. What is the production office?
So the production office is basically the logistical sort of beating heart of a film or television set. So it's an actual space, and they make sure logistically everything can happen. There's also the AD who works in logistics, but in a slightly different way. So the production office, the sort of highest up is going to be the production supervisor. How we work with them is they're often the person we're working with to make sure that nudity riders are going to go get sent out to the legal team and then also to actors' reps. And then there's the production coordinator. The production coordinator is kind of a jack-of-all-trades job. Like, you are literally coordinating almost everything. So, like, you are the person that everyone calls. If, like, let's say we're filming on set, and we're going to film on location, and it's a place where there's not going to be enough bathrooms. The production coordinator is the person who makes sure there's like enough toilets that show up that day. They're the person who makes sure that all of the meetings that we have, all of the things people say that they need, they actually get them. And also everyone actually does the things they say that they're going to do. It's a very tough job. One thing that can change from show to show, so the production coordinator has all the actor info. So that's often the person that is reaching out to actors and letting them know that we're going to go talk to them. I think one of the things that can be confusing is sometimes on other shows, that's the second AD who does that, which is a different term we're going to get into, which I think can, you know, it can cast, like, every show is different, and runs a little differently. The person who also would be in the production office is going to be the UPM, which is the unit production manager. They are the person in charge of hiring the entire crew and making sure the show stays on budget. Like, that is ultimately their job. I believe they are technically the highest up member of the below the line, which is like the crew. So below the line is the crew, above the line is creatives. It's going to be actors, directors, writers. Below the line is all of us.
Nice. These are the things that when we get into the job of intimacy coordination, we realize that the reason why we are coordinators is that we intersect with so many departments.
Yeah.
And it's really helpful to figure out too, as far as like this hierarchy of needs, like who do we need to interface with? And something that you just mentioned, Catherine and Annie, you mentioned when we're talking about on set is when we're on set, who is the person who is in charge of everyone's safety? And like, who is the person who, if something goes, if I'm worried about something as an intimacy coordinator, who should I go to as the top of the on set hierarchy?
That would be the first AD, also interchangeably called the AD.
Yes, the AD is in charge of safety on set and making sure that everyone has what they need. And there are a couple layers to the AD.
Oh yeah, AD team.
The AD team, and the assistant director is what AD means, but that is not the director's assistant.
Yes, thank you.
It is a completely different job.
Please say that again, because that is so important. Or Catherine, you brought that up today too. And what being the first AD is not being the director's assistant?
There can be director's assistant. So that is an actual job that is completely, like being a first AD is a very, it's one of the most important jobs on set. It is very high profile. It is a job you work your whole career to get there. Being a director's assistant is just a different kind of PA.
Cool.
They're very different.
Awesome. It's like an executive assistant.
Yeah.
Awesome.
For a director.
Okay, great. That helps already.
Yeah.
But other than the first AD, what other ADs?
Well, you have the second AD.
Okay.
So you have an assistant director.
Yeah, they're in charge of, essentially, it's been described to me as, and like, feel free, film school friends. if the director is in charge of everything creative, the first AD is in charge of making sure that logistically that is able to happen. So like, if the director has the vision of like, we want to get done this many scenes in a day, the first AD says, yes, that's possible to happen, and here's the timeline to make it so, and also here's the stages, or like the order of operations that'd be most supportive, and also, here is the safety. Chatting
okay.
it out. That's what but does that sound accurate
to you? Yeah, that sounds accurate to me.
Great. Does that sound accurate to you, too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. We're all like, fuck terms.
Well, it's just, I do feel like when you're on set, you're just kind of like, there's that guy.
Yeah.
Well, because we have a different understanding, because we interface with the people we need to interface with.
Yeah.
When we need to interface with them.
Yeah.
So back to first ADs. I'll do a better job at getting into that. So when we're talking about the AD team, there's a couple of people that we talk about, and there's a lot of people on the AD team, and there can be a lot more, but there's the first AD, there's the second AD, there's the second, and then there's PAs, which are they part of the AD team?
They are.
Fabulous.
Is there on set?
So like...
And PAs being production assistants.
PAs, production assistant, AD.
Assistant director.
Assistant director.
Not the director's assistant.
Okay, great. Now we have a working understanding of all of our terms. See, this is why we do these chats. When it comes to the first AD, what is the main jobs of the first AD? Like, if we, in summary, I know we're not, this is not film school version, y'all. This is like our brief understanding so you understand where we're coming from on the podcast.
I feel like at its core, a first AD makes sure that a show runs safely and on time, which sounds simple and is actually like a Herculean task that is almost impossible to accomplish.
Yes, they are the I call them the keepers of all things. They make sure that everyone is safe. They make sure that we run on time, and they're also really big problem solvers. If we are like running over, or if for some reason it's raining, or we get pushed.
Yeah, an actor is sick.
Yeah. Who helps them with that scheduling is the second AD and the second AD.
So the second AD lives at base camp, which I don't think is a term we've covered yet. Base camp is where the costume trailer is. It's where all the trailers are. It is usually a parking lot that's just filled with trailers, and that's where production lives. I actually don't even know how to describe base camp.
It's like a work hub. It's like our office, but we're all in individual trailers. Production has a trailer. The ADs have a trailer. The director has a trailer. Each actor typically has a trailer. Costumes will have a trailer. The grip and electric will have a trailer, etc. So it's where people hold their equipment, where people, you know, have office space, can hold meetings, the director can take a break, actors can rest.
Because we're not always in the same spot when we're filming a TV show or a movie, we have to be able to have a base camp or a home base that can move. We won't always be at the production office. So we need to be able to pick up our workspace and travel it with us. And like Catherine and Annie just said, that's the spot where you can find the trailers. That's the spot where we go between things. That's the spot where you go between scenes, where our giant, amazing moving closet lives. That is our truck, costume truck. And it's really important that you know where base camp is, because it's where you will you go to probably first thing every day. And you might have like a little van ride from base camp, or it might be a minute walk from set. It really depends.
Yeah, one thing I was going to say, I think how we intersect with base camp the most is actors' trailers are at base camp. So if you want to talk to an actor about their outfit, about what they're wearing, about their modesty garments, you're going to be at base. We film on set. I would say some people have had some negative experiences where they get left at base when they should be at set. Or you need to be in two places at once because you're trying to close the set, but also an actor needs you at base camp. And as Rachel just said, sometimes they're a hop and a skip. Sometimes you just walk out the door and base camp is there. Sometimes they're a 15-minute car ride. It can really be all over the place.
Yeah, that is a very good point, Catherine. That is definitely something that I wish I could be two people sometimes, because the way that the day is scheduled, and this is something I might talk to the second or the second AD about when I arrive too, is like, hey, since we've got X amount of van ride to get to set, I'm going to want to check in with this actor when they land. Is there a way for me to be able to speak to that person before they come to set? Or will I need to have a space to check in with them on set so that I, as an intimacy coordinator, still get the opportunity to check in with the actors privately before they go to work? And also so that I can tell the actor what to expect around when to meet me, because it can be a little jarring if all of a sudden someone expects to meet me in their trailer and then they're being asked to meet with me on a van ride or when they land at set. So being able to understand what is base camp, where is base camp, and who do I talk to at Basecamp's really important, which when it comes to the AD team, someone we didn't talk about yet is our set PAs versus our Basecamp PAs. Like, what do you all want to tell us a little bit about that? I feel like it's a little self-explanatory,
yeah.
But is there any like key details we should probably know about that?
Well, okay. So the Basecamp PA, as well as the second, is going to be your best friend when it comes to being like, where is an actor? Like, physically speaking, are they here yet? Are they in makeup? Like, if I need to talk to them, at what point can I grab them? That's going to be who you're talking to. Like, they are really closely following the actor's kind of schedule and making sure things, anyone before they actually physically are on set, is the job of the second to make sure they get there. Once you're on set, the first AD, the talent PA, those PA, they are going to be tracking the actors, tracking what's going on, tracking what the crew is doing. So it's a little bit of just like whose kingdom you're in at that exact moment.
Yeah, very true. Set PA will be somebody that will help you when you land on set, find that your spot where you can sit, get yourself sorted out. And the Basecamp PA is going to be your link to locating an actor who's in the works. And in the works means they have landed, they're in hair or makeup, they're going through the, we call it the works, before they're ready to come to set. So in that space, typically as an intimacy coordinator, I want to reconfirm there's consent and if there's any changes and if they have any questions, etc. You know, there's a time for us to have a private conversation.
That's awesome. And do those people like rotate at all, or do they generally stay the same, or is it different every time?
They generally stay the same.
Yeah,
Basecamp PA typically stays the same throughout the whole show.
From as someone who worked my way up as a PA, you're hired for like the job. So like if you're a production office PA, you stay at the production office. If you're a Basecamp PA, you stay at base. Unless like for some reason you were deliberately moved because like that job is open and they need you in a new place, but then you would be working that new job. It's not like a rotating set.
That makes sense. Awesome. Okay, so we've talked about costumes. We've talked about the production office. What about, and we talked a little bit about on set as far as like the AD team, but what about the creative team behind the scenes? Like the hierarchy beyond the hierarchy, as it were. There's so many overlapping systems. So who is the top of the production when it comes to, and we're throwing out some terms, what about showrunner, director, executive producer, or EP? Like, how do those people stack?
Well, usually that's where we first land in conversation, is either with a showrunner, writer, or the director, depending on the format of the show and who is in the picture. Sometimes the showrunners have stepped away and they're off to other projects, and it lands in the director's lap. Sometimes the writers are no longer, depending if it's a feature or what it is. So figuring out whose vision this is and who would like to have that conversation with me about this intimate scene, that's the person that I'm going to be speaking to first. So that's usually showrunner, mm-hmm, or writer. And then a director.
Okay, so what's the difference though between a showrunner and a writer?
Showrunner is the creator of the vision of the whole show. They'll hire a writing team.
The concept as a whole?
Concept as a whole.
Great, so they bring the idea. I want to talk about lesbians in space.
Correct.
Great.
So they'll hire a team of writers. Could be two writers, could be six writers. And so you want to talk to the writer, and then it'll come down to the director, who's actually directing the space, the actors in space with the script. And then above that, and these are all money people, are the EPs, executive producers. And they are the people that actually created the funding to make this move forward.
Awesome. So what I'm hearing is the reason why there's a difference between like showrunners and directors too, is if a showrunner comes in, they are going to be with your idea the entire season, but a director might have multiple directors on a season. So it's the showrunner's job to make sure that the continuity of their idea stays together, that it's still in their vision of what they want to occur. And when we talk about the EPs, do they have a lot of creative input, or does that depend? Like, what's that like? How does that work?
Well, that varies too, because EPs can also be the showrunner.
Okay.
Or it could be a director. So you could have multiple titles. So it varies. Typically, if they're just funding, and I'm speaking off the cuff, not necessarily a whole lot of creative input. Mm-hmm. A lot of input in how the production is run and how to cost affect the production, but not necessarily a lot of creative.
Yeah, I feel like one of the most confusing things about an EP is it's kind of a catch-all term. So, like, I feel like on shows I've worked on, an EP can be exactly what Annie was talking about. Someone who's really involved, really in it, really in the day-to-day, has raised the money. It can be a director who directed the first episode and in return got an EP credit because they set the creative tone for how it's filmed, and they never come back. They're never involved again, but they will always have that credit, and they get money from that. Actors are often EPs when they're high enough, which means they get more creative control, but, like, they're not usually, like, sitting there in meetings in the way that perhaps a different EP would. Like, I think why it's so confusing is it's a bit of a catch-all term for, like, this person is very important, and they get money for that.
Nice. That's really helpful, too, because I know that as far as compounding power dynamics are concerned, when it comes to intimacy, coordination, something that we look for is, where is there an excess of power, and can we help to offset or mitigate that somehow? And the answer is often no, yeah. But we can acknowledge that it exists and point at it. So, like, if our number one on the call sheet, we'll get into that term in a minute. If our number one on the call sheet, who is an actor, is also an EP, that might be a really good thing to bring up to the producers around why it's important to have an intimacy coordinator around for a scene. Not necessarily because that person is inherently problematic at all, but literally because, hey, you've got a lot of power, and you deal with the money and the creativity. That's a lot.
Yeah, because that way you're having a sex scene with your boss, in a way. You know?
Yeah, and that creates a big problem for a day player who's coming in for one day or a week's worth of work to work with this key person on this set, who's the actor and also an EP. We don't want those kind of dynamics in play.
Exactly. So to my other point, what is or who is a number one on the call sheet?
It is the lead most important actor. I believe ADs actually decide who's the number one on the call sheet. I don't think it's actually a credit thing, correct?
I don't know. I don't know actually who decides that, but I think it would have to do with top billing in terms of financial.
Actually, time on screen too, like maybe actual airtime, actual amount of episodes you're involved in.
To back it up, the reason they're called the number one on the call sheet is every actor is assigned a number. Like, and it keeps going. Like, you could be on Game of Thrones and be like 627. And when you look at a call sheet, you'll see the actor's name and their number. And you'll also see a small section about what's coming up. And you won't see for the next day. And you won't see the actor's name. You'll just see their number. So a department can look at it and be like, okay, we've got 2, 5, and 7. That means we need that person's, like, costumes. We need that person's hair and makeup. It's just a shorthand to make things logistically easier. Like, if you get what's called day out of days, which is a certain type of schedule, actors are only referred to by their numbers a crew member can just look at it and be like, okay, this is what we need for everything. But being number one on the call sheet means you are number one, you're kind of the most important, and you're usually the lead of the show and the most experienced.
Yeah, and so it's not necessarily like, I am the most experienced all the time. It has to do with this show that I'm on. I am number one on the call sheet, meaning maybe the show is about me.
Yep.
And
the titular role.
And when you're talking about having this number allocation, it's because we want a shorthand. We want a way to be able to discuss actors and their needs, or want a way to be able to know exactly what we need. Like, okay, we're going to need that person's trailer, that person's costumes. We're going to need whatever they stipulate on their rider for that day, and that's their number. And like Catherine said, maybe that's numbers 1, 3, and 7 for the day, or maybe it's number 326 and number 2 and number 8. But it's not having to do with any sort
of ranking of anybody's like value. It has to do with, hey, this is your what you're doing for the show and where you're allocated for this show.
I think that's a lot of information to try to digest.
So much.
So take that with a grain of salt, because it's something that we need to understand, but you don't need to understand that. But understanding that there is something called a call sheet.
Oh, yeah.
That it contains all this information and the logistics of how we get there, from where we're working, what actors are working that day, what times are needed, where the hair and makeup people that are needed, etc. All that information lives in a call sheet. And you get that call sheet the day before.
This is a great example of how things we've just talked about intersect. So the life of a call sheet is when you wrap, which is the end, the last shot, we are done filming, wrap is called.
For the day.
For the day. And then there's a wrap at the end where like you wrap on the whole production. The second finishes the call sheet. They send it to the production office, and then some poor production PA has an hour's left of work as soon as we call wrap, because they have to send out the call sheet to everyone. They have to print it out for everyone who needs it. And then they take that call sheet and they print it on top of the sides for the next day, which is just a copy of the script, but just the scenes we're filming. So everyone can have a tiny little hand-sized copy to follow along.
Oh, nice. So when at the end of the day, after you've done all of that work, there's still someone or some peoples who their job is to make the plan for the next day, make adjustments if they need to, and then put together this wonderful packet, this one-page call sheet of all the info that we need, and then attach just the scenes that we need so we're not carrying around our giant scripts for the rest of the day. And that's what you'll receive if you're maybe an actor or an intimacy coordinator or anyone working on the production for your next day at work, so you know what you're supposed to do. So you've got all that info handheld, ready to go.
And what does come up, and I think this is something we've talked about briefly, is because you're not getting your call time till the night before, it does make our lives unpredictable, because you can get a call time at midnight that's like, please be there 7 a.m. the next day, or you can get a call time that's like, please be there 10 p.m. the next day, and you don't always know what you're getting.
That makes great sense.
That makes being friends with the second AD and the second really important.
That's awesome. Well, it feels like that's also what makes it hard to be friends with people in film. It's like, oh, wow, you never know your schedule. Because
sometimes people are nice. They do try to tell you ahead of time when they're going to need you, but you can never trust them.
Well, because things change.
Yeah,
and number one got sick or got COVID showed up late, so the whole thing got pushed.
Yeah.
And so on.
Well, and those, we kind of discussed these, but also on our list to chat about was like, that is part of the dailies, right? The dailies are the scenes we need for the day. And also when we're talking about everything that goes into prep, that's part of our prep process. Yep. That is everything we need before on the day. Look at us using our terms. But what about post? What happens in post?
I just wanted to jump back into dailies because I did want to make sure people understand. So dailies are what is filmed that day that gets sent to like the post-production office and to the editors. So it is just whatever is on the sides. Once we film that, that's the dailies. And it's usually available for people to watch the next day. The way it intersects with our job is, so for intimate scenes, so dailies get sent out to a whole bunch of people, pretty much anyone who's working in post in any way whatsoever gets dailies, unless they're intimate scenes, in which case they only go to people who absolutely need them, which is generally the director, the showrunner, and depending on the team, usually the head editor.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So whatever happens on the sides for that day is then turned into, because we filmed them, the dailies.
Exactly.
Correct.
I love that. So then we just said post. So when those dailies go to post, what's post?
Post-production is after we finish, after we call wrap for the day, that information all goes to post, which is where they actually put the color, the sound, the editing all together and mix it and make a TV show or a movie. So it's ready to screen.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So we've got prep on the day or on set and then post. Mm-hmm. And those are the order of operations that you all need to know. And then, oh my gosh, did we make it through our list?
The only thing we didn't...
What didn't we talk about?
SAG.
Oh, yeah, that's important. Hello. For wherever this lives in the episode. So, we've been talking a lot about SAG or SAG-AFTRA. What is SAG-AFTRA? What does that stand for?
It's very performance-based, SAG. SAG is the Screen Actors Guild. AFTRA is the American Federation of Radio and Television Actors.
Television and Radio Association.
Television and Radio Association. But it is the big guild that covers all of the actors. It also covers stunt coordinators. It covers choreographers. As of, I think, a year or two ago, it now covers influencers who qualify. It's very performance focused. We deal with SAG a lot because all protections around sex scenes are coming from SAG union guidelines and from SAG negotiations with the Producers Guild. So SAG is probably one of the most important entities we deal with on a almost weekly basis in making sure that all of the, like when we talk about like scenes getting filmed safely, what we're talking about is often following the SAG guidelines for how to do that.
Correct. SAG basically is a giant union that houses actors, voice artists, etc., like Catherine was saying. And we follow the guidelines that they have been rapidly putting together as this field is emerging about intimacy, simulated sex, and nudity consent protocols.
Yeah, and my dyslexia totally messed up SAG-AFTRA, y'all. It's the Screen Actors Guild and the American Federation of TV and Radio Artists. There we are. So.
Hell yeah.
That alphabet soup. No, yeah. Man. Here's the thing about like all of these acronyms, like even things like AD, PA, like there are so many shorthands for things which are important because we have a lot of information to give.
I feel like the one we got left is DP.
Oh, and DP, yes.
The DP is a cinematographer. They're the head camera person.
The director of photography.
Yes. Yeah, that's what it actually stands for.
They set the visual tone for how things are lit.
And if an actor, I feel like we interact with DPs a lot because if an actor has a concern, you should tell the director. But often the person who, like if the concern is like, I want to look a certain way, I'm worried about a certain angle, I'm worried about not looking sexy, you know, I'm worried about underarm flab, whatever it is. The DP is often the person I make sure is looped in because they are the person who is making sure what it actually is going to look like on screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the DP also, you might hear the DIT in that as well, which is the digital imaging technicians. So when you're on a film set, if you have dyslexia like me and you need to like think these things through and write them down, I do that often, but also hopefully no one will quiz you on what the shorthands of these are because that would be mean. If you're doing that, please have pity on those of us with dyslexia and stop.
There are a ton of other important people that all have acronyms, but I do think that's the main ones that we talk about on this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think as far as, so we hope that today we answered some of your questions about the shorthand we've been using. If you all have any other questions about the who's who on a film set, or if you have questions about how we as intimacy coordinators intersect with those positions, we didn't go into super deep detail on those today, but we tried to give you a little mini rundown. Just please let us know. We want you to know that we are listening and we are reading our emails and we are trying to get back to you. So please, please continue listening. And you can find us on all socials and anywhere where you want to download our fabulous podcast. I'm going to try better.
I think Annie has that.
Go ahead, Annie. You get us out of here, please.
Have mercy on me. Thank you for listening to Romancing the Screen podcast. You can find us on all social media platforms at Romancing the Screen Pod or email us at romancingthescreenpod@gmail.com. Thanks again. This is Annie signing off.
That's a wrap.
Cut.
That's a wrap. Or cut. I just cut. That was a wrap.